Life is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. We're one day away from getting the second round underway with Buffalo and Montreal about to clash for an eighth time in the postseason. It's Sabres Live with Marty. I'm Brian. How are you, sir?
It's a beautiful day out there.
Is it really?
I won't lie. It was warm. It's going to get a little colder.
Not beautiful when I came in.
Yeah, it's going to get a little colder and it's going to rain. But you know what? Tomorrow,
beautiful
Sabrehood block party. It's going to be dry. It's going to be a little colder, but dry. No rain expected for tomorrow night. We're going to talk to Pete Guelli, obviously, about what's going on in round two and a recap of round one here at the bottom of the hour. But I did have a really nice day yesterday. Did some plumbing again at the house, and it was successful in my first try, Duffer. First try. Did not flood anything. Did not break anything. It all worked perfectly.
How?
That's a good question. I think I was patient. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. I stayed with the structure and the plan and the everything, and I was patient, and everything went the way it should. So that was good.
Well, I would assume that's how the Sabres are feeling about their practice right now.
Yes.
In advance of taking on the Habs. Yesterday we talked about Sam Carrick and the fact that he would be back at practice today, which he was, but so too with the main group was Konstantin Hellenius. So that's interesting in itself. Obviously, neither presence impacted what we have typically been seeing as far as line combinations are concerned. But what do you... what is your inner prognostication meter indicated?
My spidey sense. And I think
like
those
that,
two guys could come in the series, but in different factors, in different ways. I think we all know that Sam Carrick is and was fantastic as a fourth line center.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that you got to give Carrick a couple of days of practice with the team and seeing what the team is going. Tyson Kozak with Greenway and Malenstein have done good, but you may need a little bit more. Number one, you know that Carrick kills penalty. He's a good right shot. Penalty killer that takes face off on the right side of the ice, and Lindy Ruff has been trusting him in that role. So maybe there is that opportunity at some point to say we need Carrick in the lineup for more than what he can do on the fourth line, the penalty kill side. But he scored a bunch of goals, and there was some offense, and there's speed in his game. So that's that. When you look at Konstantin Hellenius, for me, it's more about, get your experience, practice, and if there is a major need, mm-hmm. if there is an injury concern or something in your top nine, mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're putting Konstantin Hellenius on the fourth line and you say, figure it out, kid. That's not what his roles will be, and that's not what it should be right now.
Right.
But if there is a need in the top nine, mostly probably the middle six, that's where Hellenius performed so well when he was called up. I mean, that game in Nashville, with Norris and Oslin. Mm-hmm. That's exactly where I can see him fitting. If you need him right now, you don't, but you don't know what that's going to look like by game 3 and 4 of this series. So you have depth, you have players healthy, taking practice, and ready to jump in if you need them.
Happy 27th to Josh Norris, by the way. He gets advanced billing, as we usually save birthdays for later. But when you're on the current roster, you deserve the mention early on. Also, Dunn and Pearson, of course, are among the forwards that, would be available for Lindy Ruff as this series begins tomorrow. Home teams are now 25-24 after two wins last night to put them back on the good side. So,
but you can see just quickly, but the extras. Like most of the guys all have white and blue jerseys. The extras, the Carricks and the Hellenius and the Pearson and the Dunn and the Colton Ellis and those five guys that mm-hmm. are the next one coming up, right? They have gray jerseys. So it's they'll be ready to jump in. But there's a bit of a separation. This is our main roster. This is what we're practicing with. And then you guys are waiting to get in and be able to get the opportunity when it presents itself.
Well, I have not had the chance to ask you this question in the wake of the clinch game 6 in Boston, but Buffalo was clean in that game. 0-0 on the PK.
Yeah.
Will that happen again in these Stanley Cup playoffs?
I was going to say Buffalo did not take a penalty, but that's not true Benson did take a penalty late, but it didn't result in a power play for the Boston Bruins. Yes, I think this will happen again. where the Sabres will not face, either the Sabres will not get a power play or will not face a penalty kill situation, a shorthanded situation. The further you go, and it's cliche, but it is also a true statement. The further you go, often less penalties are being called. Maybe the teams are smart. They play hockey. They don't get involved in taking penalties. So you may only see one, two, maybe at the most three power plays. And I think we're going to get another game where there will be a 0-4-0 in a column. What do you think?
I ask the questions. I don't have any answers. In 2 weeks,
you do have a lot of answers.
In 2 weeks, what is the next picture featuring Zach Benson and Marty St. Louis going to look like? And is it going to resemble in any way, presumably, what was their first picture some years ago?
Yeah, is it going to be a handshake where Marty St. Louis is frowning and Zach Benson is smiling, or the other way around? This was at a summer hockey tournament where Benson on the right with the green Under Armour jersey is seen. They ran into Marty St. Louis. He was coaching his kids. That's the experience he had before taking a coaching job in the NHL. He joked about it.
Which proves the point.
Well, yeah, but it took also
no,
now he's
but
been
it
there
proves
for
the
you.
Point that anybody in this chair or sitting in a bar or sitting in a bathroom or sitting anywhere that has a comment about whether someone's experienced enough.
Oh, I see what
or
you're
isn't,
saying. Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, anybody can coach. Anybody can do anything. And the number of people that get railroaded when they get an opportunity for perceived lack of experience, especially when you have the career that Marty St. Louis had, to me is an outright joke. Wow. I'm actually so happy for Marty St. Louis that he's had the steady progression and success in the NHL. And, oh, I would love to tell a lot of people what to do with
well,
opinions,
yeah, I get what you're saying. And Marty joked about that when he was hired by the Montreal Canadiens. And he said, my coaching experience is, you know, travel, hockey, peewee, 14U or whatever. Which, but he also, he put the work in. Mm-hmm. He got to Montreal. He worked in. And look, there has been situations in the last couple of years where he's been criticized for maybe not making changes. He does it the way that he does it. Every coach is going to get criticized. I'll say this. Marty St. Louis coached one heck of a game 7 against the Tampa Bay Lightning, changing the lines, changing the defense. He rolled pretty much 5 defensemen, and he had Noah Dobson being that kind of fifth wheel in there. Struble played 5 minutes, just like Kesselring in game 6 for the Buffalo Sabres. The Habs are making changes in their lines going into this series. I don't know if it's going to be the lines that we're going to see for game 1, but what you saw in Game 7 against the Tampa Bay Lightning was Newhook in the middle of Demidov and Gallagher, Danault and Evans together with Anderson. You're not seeing that anymore. You're seeing Jake Evans in the middle of Newhook and Demidov, trying to give maybe their depth a little bit more oomph in the middle there. Danault with Tessier and Anderson. Doc with Bolduc and Gallagher. The top line reunited with Slafkovský, Suzuki, and Caulfield. Like, I really feel like the Buffalo Sabres have a ton of depth up front. And this is a direct response, especially starting on the road for Montreal, in adding more depth to be able to compete with that. We'll see what that looks like after game 1 or in the middle of game 1. But that's the change already that Marty St. Louis is making to his lines up front.
Well, if you don't know already, but I'm sure you do, here's the calendar look as Buffalo gets started tomorrow against Montreal on home ice, and then Friday and all the way through, potential for 7 in the series, and it begins tomorrow night. We, of course, have pre- and post-game coverage right here on MSG and our streaming channels. More on that coming up. So, anything else that we... you know what? There is one thing, actually, yes, before we move on to around the NHL. And again, yesterday was jammed, and today is also going to be, you know, from a business and fan engagement standpoint, with yes, Pete Gowelli talking to us at the bottom. We had a great chat with Bo Byram yesterday, who had the opportunity, of course, early in his career to be around Gabe Landeskog. We talked about Rasmus Dahlin and his Masterton Trophy nomination as a finalist now, with Landeskog being one of the others and Jonathan Toews being the other. This is a tricky one to debate, mm-hmm, because it's personal and not statistical, but who do you think will win this? Dahlin, or all respect to Toews, but he's not even in the conversation, in my opinion. It is Landeskog and Dahlin, and who do you think wins?
So I am biased, and I think Rasmus Dahlin wins this. Like, a very, very few times in the history of the NHL, you can talk about a player, a leader on a team, whose fiance had a heart transplant in the summertime where she was pregnant, he lost the baby. There's a lot going on. He had to go back to Sweden a couple of times. And getting his team back in the playoffs with his leadership, with his maturity, I think there is so many qualities to that that would be a winner in Rasmus Dahlin. I do understand the Landeskog and the Jonathan Toews, argument. I think both of them would be worthy candidates. And the fact that, you know, overcoming injuries, the rehab, the treatments, the comeback road right to the NHL. But I think Dahlin is very different. I'm actually surprised Linus Ullmark was not a top three finalist in this, with everything that Linus has gone through this season and how outspoken he has been to talk about mental health and all of it. But I do feel that between Landeskog, Toews, and Dahlin, you have three worthy winners. But I would give Dahlin, hands down, the award for everything that he and his fiance had to go through this past year.
I will say this, because Landeskog emerged after almost 3 years away in last year's postseason, yes, my brain was not really processing him as the guy this year. Which is wrong, obviously, because he didn't get the opportunity to be a Selke finalist last year, Masterton finalist last year. But it doesn't take away from how deserving Landeskog is.
He was still a question mark this year.
Well, of course he was.
It was not like, he's going to come back and play and have that impact.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, if Toews had come back for a handful of games last year in the playoffs, would he have been not a worthy candidate this year? No, mm-hmm. They're worthy candidates because this is a new season.
Yeah.
And everything that you put in the works is for this season to be fully healthy.
Don Luce in 75, Pat LaFontaine in 95 are the only previous Sabres to win the award. Rasmus Dahlin, a finalist for the Masterton. We will dole out our Selke finalists, which will become official tomorrow. A little bit later in the show, quickly around the National from last night. Let's start with Philadelphia and Carolina, given its Eastern implications and the fact that Carolina has rattled off six straight wins, albeit this time they did it the hard way, because for the first time in this year's playoffs, they actually trailed.
Yeah, which is amazing to think that you're in game six of the playoffs right now, and for the first time, you gave up the first goal of the game, you trailed in the game, but Carolina is the type of team that just keeps coming back and keeps coming back. And Seth Jarvis with a huge goal to make it 2-2. His buddies, and if you watch the Olympics and the coverage, he has this group of friends that follows him along, and they actually did the hurricane warning signal before the game started. He had the goal to put it 2-2, but I thought the Flyers played probably the type of game they needed to play. Mm-hmm. Carolina is going to shoot a lot, and Carolina is going to have the puck possession a lot, but they had a ton of chances. They had chances to take, 2-0, 3-0, 3-1 lead. That didn't happen. They didn't make it 2-0. Carolina come back, but they had a chance to score 3, 4, or 5 goals. Zegras out of the penalty box looking for a break. They had opportunities. Freddie Anderson was fantastic again, and he's shown why he's probably the best goalie in the playoffs this season, because he made some big saves in that game.
15 of them in overtime as Carolina would go on to win 3-2. Are you surprised that you're saying what you're saying about Anderson, given that Brandon Bussey was the story in the crease for Carolina this year?
I'm not surprised in the short kind of sample that Freddie Anderson can play at that level. We've seen him. I just don't know that this is sustainable for Freddie over 16, 17, 20 games, right? And that's the big problem here. But if Carolina goes out and 4 in the first round and beat Ottawa in a sweep, and if they all of a sudden go out and win against Philly in 4 or 5, and Freddie Anderson is getting what he needs most is the rest and the management. And I think this is going to be huge for the Carolina Hurricanes. That win yesterday was huge, knowing that now they're up to nothing going into Philadelphia, and put even more doubt in the Flyers' mind with the way they were able to come back after being down to nothing and win this one in overtime.
Taylor Hall having a magical postseason overtime winner, the first of his career. He's riding a six-game point streak and has obviously fit in incredibly well on the Hurricanes, who continue to dominate typically on a night-to-night basis from a shot attempt standpoint. But again, last night with Philadelphia producing, you know, 15 shots on goal in overtime, I liken it a lot to, I feel the more Buffalo has seen Carolina in recent years, you almost, well, it was different last night because Philadelphia scored early, but you do often find yourself, as they did in game one, on the wrong side of it from the shot clock early, and then it almost never gets back to level. The Flyers did about as good a job last night keeping it as close as you could ever imagine, and I think this one's a long ways from being over. There's no, you know, consolation prizes, obviously, in the playoffs, but I thought Philadelphia played well. Vegas and Anaheim, real quick, last night, obviously, Mitch Marner seems to be in a real comfortable place right now for this Vegas team that, you know, handed Anaheim a loss last night in what was, I would say, lower scoring than some might have expected, but it was probably welcomed from Anaheim's standpoint to be in a better defensive game. The problem for them was their offense wasn't as opportunistic as it usually is.
Well, just like we saw Minnesota against Colorado in 5-on-5, Dallas wasn't great against Minnesota in the first round, so it's a different round. This is a different type of match and game for the Anaheim Ducks. It's not going to be like we're going to score 5 or 6 or 7 goals in a game with goaltending being an issue. Carter Hart was really good in the game last night for the Vegas Golden Knights. I really felt like this had overtime written all over it. Mm-hmm. And 1-1, it feels like Anaheim is just starting to really impose their game on the Vegas Golden Knights, and then Vegas ends up with a lucky break, and we'll talk about it a little later in Dazzle and Disturb, but they ended up with a goal with 5 minutes left and the empty netters for winners here for the Vegas Golden Knights. But I think this is a very different first game for the Anaheim Ducks. They'll be fine. I think they can sort it out and how to play against Vegas. Vegas is, to me, the better team, but I think Anaheim responded really well, knowing this was not going to be like the Edmonton Oilers series.
Sabres-Habs, of course, the final series to get going in round number 2. It happens tomorrow here in Buffalo. Canes are up 2-0. Colorado and Minnesota, it's 1-0 Habs. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Vegas Golden Knights were able to win last night to open that series on home ice with the win. Time for D&D.
Asked me about my family and if I had some people here. He's a very nice guy. Asked me about the Sabres and the Buffalo Bills. So had a little chat about that too. So it was pretty cool. He's a great guy.
Well, this is pretty cool. Joe Mack, a Williamsville East grad, played in his first ever Major League Baseball game for the Miami Marlins, and then it was against Bryce Harper, who's on first base in the Phillies. And when he reached first base, Harper, like any good first baseman would do, you strike a conversation. Hey, what's up? How you doing? Congrats for his game. And here you're from Buffalo or something. How about them Sabres? And so he gets to talk about it. So it's fantastic. What a story. 23 years old, making his Major League debut, a Buffalo kid, cheering for the Sabres as well.
First rounder 5 years ago. Now, Jackson Lacombe has had an unbelievable Stanley Cup playoffs, but last night, an unfortunate turn of events. And the reason it's most unfortunate, it would have gone down as one of the greatest assists in Stanley Cup playoff history for Leo Carlson, only to have Lacombe double clutch to a certain extent in his brain. He didn't double clutch with his hands. He immediately passed it off to the net front presence, as opposed to depositing it in the full open side of the cage that he was staring down. You can understand why he would look to Troy Terry and how it could have been easy for Terry if the pass was executed perfectly, but Terry was actually in too deep, and Lacombe, along with the rest of us, felt the exact same way. There's no other way to put it. The only good news is Lacombe factored in on the Ducks' only goal, which tied the game, so it looked like he was coming out of that moment, that disturbing moment, only to have
even worse luck where he wins an icing with Jack Eichel, and the linesman says no, and it immediately turns into the game-winning goal for Barbashev. This is disturbing if you watch any amount of regular season hockey in the NHL.
Usually the tie goes to the defensive team, and it's being waved off from the position of the linesman on the left side of the wall. It looked like Eichel was maybe going to get his shoulder in front. You can see on the right side of the screen the linesman coming in. But Eichel was never in the lead, was never going to win this race. That should have been an icing. It turns around, missed coverage, Brett Howden on the back door, and Joel Quenneville was livid, yelling at the official. Obviously, he's yelling at the official that didn't make the call. He had his hand in the air. It's not his call.
Right.
Can't all of a sudden say, no, I'm going to overturn my buddy's, waving off the icing. You got to let it go. I think everybody realized after the fact, oh, we blew this one.
Yeah.
But you blew this one, and it ends up being the game-winning goal. That's a tough one. Quickly, this or that for you, Duffer. Which one was the worst miss in an open net? Marcus Foligno against Jake Oettinger had a wide open net and tried to bring it to the back end in the Dallas series, or the Lacombe wide open net?
I don't remember the Foligno one, so I'll go with Lacombe.
You know what? I'll say this. I think the Lacombe was more outrageous, but Marcus Foligno had a pass come over to his strong side on a bit of a two-on-one. All he had to do was shoot in the empty net, but what he thought is that the goalie was going to come over, mm-hmm. and he tried to go to the back end just to run right into the goalie, who was still in the back
that
post.
That was the play I was actually going to ask you about, whether you thought it was a trip. Because it wasn't a shot on goal at that point in time.
No.
So why should the goaltender be allowed to go out and body slide at someone's legs?
I think that the reason why it was not a trip is because there's no way Jake Oettinger would expect Marcus Foligno to come that way. Like, he's like trying to recover after being so late on the play that it ended up being a collision. But
if you're asking officials to get into the thought process of a player, then you're opening up a dangerous can of worms, because I'm sure most of them will say, I wasn't thinking of putting the puck over the glass, and it happens repeatedly.
That's the way it used to be.
Right.
When it used to be...
Yeah, but it used to be obviously intentional. That's why they put the rule.
99.9% of the time it was intentional.
Foligno and company are in action tonight. There's one game in the NHL. It is Minnesota and Colorado. Over-under is what, in your opinion? Or should be what, in your opinion, based on a 15-goal first game?
It should be 6.5. Go back to 6.5 because teams are going to figure it out.
Okay.
But if you want me to look it up quickly,
because
the Anaheim-Edmonton series, it moved up to 7.5 many times in that series. So it'd be interesting. It is still at 6.5 right now. Funny enough, the under favored in that series for game tonight, for game two.
Obviously, because that no-brainer.
To go the under?
Yeah.
And even though they scored 15 goals in game one?
Have you not watched every series in the history of ever? There's always an overcorrection.
And yes, there is.
For me, it's just about, can the goaltenders live up to their team's expectations and corrections, and we'll see. But I do want to say that, and draft lotteries tonight.
Yeah.
Congratulations to all who celebrate. Okay, Conn Smythe odds.
Festivus.
We've been waiting to do this for like 4 weeks now.
Okay.
So my apologies for talking too much in all the other shows, and we never got to it. Conn Smythe odds.
Ooh.
Producer Sam has whittled it down to the top 18.
In top honor 18, of, there's in, 18 players in consideration.
In honor of Danny Gare, we've whittled it down to the top 18. So when you come into the building tomorrow and you look up and see Danny's number in the rafters, you can think about these Conn Smythe odds. Who are the 18 quote-unquote favorites right now, Marty?
I don't think I could go with 18,
sure,
but I'm
going to
give you Nathan
teams.
MacKinnon.
Yes.
He's in there. Cale Makar.
Yes.
Okay, he's in there. How about Logan Stankoven?
Yes.
Okay, he's in there. What about Quinn Hughes?
Yes.
Matt Boldy?
No.
No Boldy. That is, probably because they don't think Minnesota is going to beat Colorado.
Yeah, but it's still an indictment.
I'm going to go to goaltenders. I'm going to go Scott Wedgwood.
Yes.
I'm going to go Freddie.
How does Wedgwood stay in the running after game one? Anyway, because he won.
He's got great numbers.
Because he won, that's
yes.
why. Yeah.
Freddie Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. How about the little Buffalo Sabres action here? I'm going to go with Thompson.
Tage Thompson, yes. He's well down the list at plus 3,500. By the way, Freddie Anderson was second to MacKinnon. So.
Yeah, I was going to say the Sabres. I'm going to say Lane Hudson. for Montreal?
Nope.
No? Did they have a Montreal Canadiens on the list?
Yes, two
that
of
is
them.
Nick Suzuki?
He's well down the list at plus 4,000.
And then I'll still put Cole Caulfield there because he can score. No.
Mm-mm.
Jakub Dobesh.
Yes, okay. Plus 3,300.
Oh, Alex Lyon.
Alex Lyon is not on the list, but he's as close as humanly possible. He was, if you were in the lottery and you needed that bonus number to win, you would get it with Alex Lyon. He's 19th on the list. Yes.
Okay. We don't have a bonus number on the 50-50, but that's all right. You don't need it. Jack Eichel.
Jack Eichel.
Mitch Marner.
Who?
Mitch Marner.
Yes.
Okay, I think these are all the guys that I basically wrote down. I know I don't have 18, but I did pretty good.
I don't know which ones you missed. Rasmus Dahlin is one for sure. Seth Jarvis and Marty Natchez. Yeah. My hearing's out of whack.
I didn't announce the Rasmus Dahlin pick. I had it written down, but I didn't go to it, so that's a problem.
We'll get back in sync, I promise, in our pre- and post-game coverage. It continues beyond round one, and we're thrilled to do so here on MSG and all the Sabres social platforms. So it's 30 minutes prior to every game, and of course, immediately after, we'll have our Buick and GMC game night. With all the reaction and, of course, our Lexus post-game show, so we will break down the highlights, get all the reaction from the room, coaches, and more. Pete Gowelli coming up on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Can't wait till tomorrow. It's game one, Sabres and Canadiens. And of course, being a home game, this is another opportunity for you to get involved in our 50-50 raffle presented by Northtown Automotive. Guaranteed jackpot of $150,000. We went over $500,000 the last time. And we have had many right near $400,000. And of course, this is a great opportunity for you to win and give back to our community simultaneously. Visit sabres.com/50-50. You can get the tickets already. They are actively for sale right now on the website or scanning the QR code on the screen here on MSG. As promised, Pete Gowelli, Sabres President of Business Operations, is with us in studio now to reflect quickly, I would assume, on round one because we're already on to the next. Yeah. Welcome back. How are you?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I don't think I could be here under better circumstances.
Agreed. Yeah,
so what was that like for you? Because you've obviously worked in the NBA, but the NHL, like going on the road to Boston, seeing the fan interaction here, what was the different points and maybe the fun parts of it all for you to experience in round one?
I mean, just amazing. You know, first of all, NHL hockey is incredible. It's probably the best sport you can possibly see live in particular. Mm-hmm. Buffalo is such an amazing hockey market, and to see how everything's kind of exploded, and now I think we've captured the imagination of the rest of the league in many ways. It was really special. The home games were unbelievable, how people showed up and showed out. What we saw in Boston, you know, seeing the team kind of come together on the ice and win three road games, really, really special moment. And you brought it up, Duff, when you're talking about, you know, those 50-50 numbers, that tells you everything you need to know about Buffalo, mm-hmm. right? This generous fan base that's so community focused. You look at what happened with the Canadian national anthem the other day. Yeah. So if people always ask, why is it different in Buffalo? Those are two great examples of why it's different here.
That was completely unexpected, yeah. and obviously became one of the bigger social media talking moments, and then beyond social media, because it just became an everyday conversation for a number of days. What else do you take from that moment?
We talk about what a great hockey town it is, and I don't think it's, you can't crystallize it until you see something like that, because that only happens here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sold out crowd. Yes, we have some fans coming from north of the border, but those are mainly people from Buffalo. And I think, one, they stepped in for two reasons, the respect, right, that they have for our friends north of the border, and obviously to help Cammy Clooney, who was in a little bit of trouble because the microphone wasn't working again. Like, it just, I don't know if that happens anywhere else. It was just amazing to be a part of it. You knew it was going to be a viral moment mm-hmm. immediately, but I really like the fact that especially these national audiences are getting a sense of what Buffalo is all about.
Yeah, they finally, thankfully, know that we do two anthems here every night.
I know. Why are they doing two anthems? It's been like that since 1970, people. Watch a game or two. How about, you talk about, like, social media stuff, and we could talk about the Blade Gang and the Beer Saber. Like, Carolina just unveiled their Beer Skate. Like, it's an imitation of the Beer Saber in their own way. Is it flattering to know that The Beer Saber was so popular. ESPN is here talking about it. TNT is here talking about it. Everybody loves the Beer Saber. Now you got other teams that are kind of copying what started here.
Yeah, well, look, it's sports. And I do believe it's a form of flattery, but everything has been done somewhere. It's really, what's your take on it? And I think here in Buffalo, we found the perfect take on that particular product, and people, it really resonated with people, and they jumped all over it. And look, one thing I will say is it's coming back. There's been some production challenges, but it's definitely coming back. So anybody who didn't get a shot at a Beer Saber in the past, we'll have one in the future. I don't want to get into the exact timing because I think we want it to be a surprise, but it's going to happen again. Yeah, it's cool just to see those kind of organic moments. So something like that happens, and it's not just the Beer Saber, it's how our fans interact with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing things that they were doing during the game and the excitement around it. And then when you see things like the Blade Gang, again, something that's really organic. That was not anything that we pushed. Somebody came up with that organically in Buffalo, and we're paying attention. We're going to lean into things like that. And those guys are really having a moment. But I think it's added to everything that's gone on here. I think it really, it elevates the experience for all the fans. And I do think it kind of moves into what the players are thinking as well. Yeah. You know, those guys are excited to be representing Buffalo. The market's galvanized, the players are galvanized, the team is galvanized, and I think that's what's leading to the success we're having.
The Blade Gang obviously began outside and eventually worked its way inside with the banging of the drum, but the outside component to all of this is one of the more fascinating elements in this market because of how long it had been between playoff games and the development of everything around here. So now that you have a round under your belt as an organization, how do you feel about the Saberhood Block Party, Canal Side, Plaza, and everything that can be a part of playoff game night experiences?
Yeah, well, the party in the Plaza had this incredible reputation. And look, there's a lot of people that hadn't even seen it before. A lot of people had said, hey, this was amazing. We need to make sure you're doing it again. It was an incredible moment when the team was successful back in the day, but there's a lot of fans that had never experienced it before. So when we rolled it out again and saw how people reacted to it and saw how things like the Blade Gang was additive to what was going on there, I think it was really, really special. So for the, you know, we've been walking a fine line here. For the home games, obviously, it's a no-brainer. We're going to have it. Mm-hmm. And you can see the fans come down. I think there was north of 10,000 people here last time we did it. Wow. For some of the road games, you know, we want everybody to share in this. So we were really intentional. We want this to be all about Buffalo. And there's a lot of bars and restaurants that are really benefiting from these road games of people coming in. We've talked to them, a lot of them directly, and they're really excited about the impact it's had on their business. So we're kind of going back and forth between, you know, that aspect of it and what we wanted to do here locally. You know, as we continue to advance, there will be some other things we do. We anticipate, again, doing a party in the Plaza and something at Canal Side for the road games as they become more and more meaningful.
Well, as we see on the screen right now, Seneca Resorts and Casino are going to have watch party and the Saberhood Bar Network watch party for Game 3 and 4 on the road. But Game 6, there could be a viewing party here at KeyBank Center with people in the building. We've seen it in Montreal. We've seen it in other arena. What's the challenge now to say, okay, the building's going to be even busier, even though there's no games on the ice, staff and everything, that's a challenge as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, these are always been full-time jobs, but then when you make the playoffs, it's a whole different ballgame because you're working through not only the home games, but more and more people are part of what's going on with the road games as well. You know, one thing I wanted to note is the events we're having, the whole bar network, there's another 10 bars and restaurants included in that. So there's a lot of places for people to go, and many that aren't in the actual network are obviously benefiting from it as well. But it will be very interesting, you know, when we roll this out here locally and extend it to road games, what it looks like. I'm assuming it's going to be pretty popular, but I guess we'll see.
It's going to be popular. And this are when, you know, outside the home games and whatnot, but what about inside? Like, we talk about tickets, obviously. The tickets response was amazing in round one, but what does it look like for round two? And obviously making this home ice advantage. And, you know, they're Canadians travel well, and that's great, but this is Buffalo, and how do we maneuver through this?
Yeah, look, response to round one was incredible. I don't know that you could physically move tickets faster than they were being moved for round one. Until we got to round two. And then they moved just as fast, if not faster. And again, I think from the beginning, like you have to make sure your season ticket holders are taken care of first. They're the lifeblood of your organization. They're the foundation of this year. They're the foundation of our successful years. Many of them have been here for a long time. They've suffered through some challenging seasons. So you give them the first opportunity, and you give them the opportunity to buy some additionals as part of it as well. You know, it's tough when you're dealing with the proximity and some of these Canadian teams that have a great following. But any of those tickets that are out there, they're on the secondary market, and unfortunately you can't necessarily control that. Obviously, we would love our fans to make sure they're selling them to people in Buffalo if they decide they want to move them, which can't necessarily guarantee that's going to happen. You know, I'm going to anticipate we're going to have a very strong Buffalo Sabres crowd in this building, and they'll do what they normally do. And if all that happens, it'll continue to be a home ice advantage for us.
Well, the players, as you know, welcome that time and time again. They just have felt the surge here in popularity, and it's been going on now for almost 5 months, obviously, since December the 9th and the 10-game winning streak, which was the catalyst for everything turning around. How have you viewed the players through, and, you know, to a certain extent, interacted, because you're around this a lot? Like, what are you personally seeing and feeling in all of this?
I mean, it's a great group. First of all, they're talented, and these guys are all kind of growing and maturing at the right time. And Lindy's done an amazing job of kind of unlocking the talent that we had here in this organization. So it's been really fun to watch that whole maturation. But, when we were on the road in Boston, I was sitting with some of our scratch players, and you can just – they were so into it. These guys aren't on the ice, right? And they're completely into it. And you can see the team dynamic is throughout the entire organization. And, you know, clearly that makes a difference, right? The right culture, the right chemistry, and that's all happening. And, you know, I keep pointing back to Lindy. You know, Lindy got here 2 years ago. That first year he was here, he came in kind of late. It's kind of hard to get your entire program in place. I think he did a lot of what he wanted to do. In the offseason, we spent a lot of time sitting with him, and he had a vision for where he thought he could take this team based on what happened in that first year. And without getting into specifics, I don't want to name any particular names, everything he said he was going to do, he's done. Everything he thought could happen has happened. It's almost like he had a crystal ball. Mm-hmm. And even getting off of that slow start, and obviously we made some additional changes, I think helped maybe ignite some of this as well. What he's done has been amazing, and I know there's a process for the Jack Adams, and everyone has to go through it, but this is the biggest no-brainer in sports for me. Yeah. What he's accomplished here and what he's done, he certainly deserves to be the coach of the year.
He's obviously the betting favorite when it comes to that. What about Jarmo? Because of, you know, the job that he's done, the trade deadline, Sam Carrick is practicing today after the injury suffered at the end of this season. Logan Stanley, we're seeing a lot of the players having a role. But getting to know him now, number one, have you played pickleball with him?
I have not.
And number two, like, what about, like, the what he's done and the impact that it had for the team?
Yeah, I think he's had a huge impact. And, again, a lot of the stuff goes back to last summer where we made the decision to bring in a senior-level advisor, and it ended up being Jarmo. We made some big changes in strength and conditioning, for instance, and Brian Gallivan's obviously doing a great job. It's a lot of those pieces kind of coming together at the same time. I think when we made the transition to Jarmo, you know, just created this kind of instant credibility. It was maybe that next step to ignite the fire to get us to where we're going right now. And he's been incredible to work with, just seeing how deliberate he is, how strategic it is, how he's already thinking about some of the things that we're doing next year, bringing in Mark Bergevin, bringing in Josh Fillon, building out that front office. It's been fun to work closely with him. And, you know, yeah, he's a serious guy. He's very stoked, but he's a great, great guy. When you get him one-on-one and you're talking to him, he's a lot of fun to hang out with and talk hockey with. Just a wonderful person. I'm thrilled that he's here at part of the organization.
Has he shared any of the Finnish chocolate? He said we had that, you know, embedded or, you know, that is it still called embedded? Yes. That, you know, at the trade deadline, and he said, I'm getting a bunch of chocolate. Has he shared the Finnish chocolate?
He's very generous with the Finnish chocolate. You know, we even had some on the plane on the way out.
I may have to go upstairs and get
that. Impact as well. He's bringing people together through chocolate. It's a great thing to see.
Pete, why don't you lay it out for everybody one more time here as we are on the eve of game one of round two, Buffalo hosting Montreal tomorrow night, and just your expectations and things fans should know about moving forward.
Yeah, I think, look, we're going to continue to evolve the experience, and this is a round-by-round. It's a game-by-game, round-by-round exercise, so we're never going to get ahead of ourselves. There's always some planning taking place, but, you know, I thought round one went great. You know, the home ice advantage was there. The fans did a great job. The party in the plaza worked. Canal side worked. And we're going to continue to kind of elevate that as we move forward. You've seen some of the things we have relative to the bar network, et cetera, and as we move, and we'll start doing some things for the away games as well. But, look, I'm anticipating this just to continue to ramp up. You know, our fans have been waiting for this. This is finally their opportunity. They deserve it. People are learning everything they need to know finally. about Buffalo through the right lens. So I'm excited to see what round two holds. I'm so glad we finally broke this drought, and now we're here, and the fans are starting to get what they deserve.
Well, thanks for finally getting in our studio here, and thank you for
thanks for having me. Yeah, I'll come back. All we got to do is get a golf simulator in here, and I'll spend more time.
I'll be with you. Okay. I'll work on my
that can
my
be
chipping.
On your side of the room. It's a little tight over here.
That's good. You lefty or righty?
I'm a righty.
Well, I'll have to bring two sets of clubs.
Pete Goeli with us here on Sabres Live today, and of course for everything we just talked about, Sabres.com, Sabres Social gives you everything you need to know. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Buffalo Pro Shop, the brand new online store of the Sabres and Bandits. Visit BuffaloProShop.com to get your exciting new team gear with unique styles. Of course, it is a great outlet to have at your disposal, especially at this time of year. Sabres skated this morning. Game one happens tomorrow. Sam Carrick, of course, in the words of Lindy Ruff, can definitely return in this series. Yep. It was, as we all saw, pretty much a freak accident within the fight. Carrick himself saying he didn't, really hurt his shoulder or break any bones. And obviously today we saw Helenius skating with the group, and that was more just to have the coach have an extra centerman to work with when you have extra players and want to be able to roll more traditional lines. So Helenius was out there, and that's obviously because Östlund is unavailable here this round. We'll learn officially the Calder finalists later tonight during the draft lottery. The Selke finalists will be unveiled tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is probably the most difficult exercise to whittle down among the 700-plus regular players in the NHL.
Yes.
Obviously, not all of them forwards, but top defensive forward, who do you have?
Well, I think that we are facing the what will be the Selke winner this year in Nick Suzuki with the Montreal Canadiens. I really feel 101 points, but the tough matchups, the defensive responsibilities, killing penalties. There's a lot with Nick Suzuki that resonate to the Selke. So I'm saying Suzuki, Selke. Anthony Cirelli will be in the top three. And maybe it's recency bias and what he's been able to do playing against Suzuki and Caulfield in the first round. I think he'll be there. I think there's a lot of other candidates. Sam Reinhart could be in there.
It'd be hard to go with any Panthers based on their year.
Based on their season, you're right. I thought Sam Reinhart was going to be in the Lady Bing conversation. He wasn't in there either.
I say that partly tongue-in-cheek because I'm fully expecting Barkov to get some votes again, which turned this into the travesty that it was years ago when Ovechkin got nominated for
left and right wing.
But yes, exactly. I would say this. I think Hagel is actually someone who can get more than Cirelli. And I think Boldy is you look at players that aren't going to get the top billing for the offensive and MVP awards, but I also think, and this is something he wanted, Alex Tuch was 15th last year, and I think he's going to rise up the rankings based on Buffalo's development this year.
Yeah.
And I think Tuch will have a place. I don't know if he'll be a finalist, but it would be a great
if he gets top 10.
Yeah. Hey, this date... 2006. Holy cow.
What a game. This was a 7-6 overtime win. Game one in Ottawa. I mean, we are
shorthanded goal to tie it.
Shorthanded goal to tie it. And
power
there was
play goal falls behind.
For the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, you have the moment of the shorthanded, and then everybody remembers how Ottawa went ahead and the smirk from Smolinski, right?
Yeah.
And then you end up, you have this incredible, unfortunate miss by Emery.
With 20 seconds left.
Can't get his glove on the puck. The game is tied to Tim overtime
Conley.
We go. And heroics from Greer and Drury.
Yeah, and that was Tim Conley tying it with a hot potato puck right around Ray Emery. And very early in overtime, a turnover, and you got Chris Drury that shot it barely, just from inside the circle, and he beats Ray on the short side. Amazing.
Many birthdays on this day, including your buddy Andrew Peters.
Andrew Peters, happy birthday, Petey.
We'll see you tomorrow.